A very good morning to all of you. Good morning. Great to see you all wake up so early and get here, especially after the party last night. Excellent. So my name is Ganesh Srinivasan. I'm a program manager in the Azure networking team. I'm going to be joined by two of my colleagues, Narayan Annamalai and Yushin Wang. Both of them are also from the Azure networking team. Those two are our resident gurus in network security, network virtualization, and connectivity to the cloud. So as you can imagine, we're going to be talking about hybrid networking, hybrid scenarios in Azure today. We are from the networking team, so you will see some amount of bias towards a lot of networking features that we will be talking in this session. So what we're going to be doing today is we're going to be starting by talking about the various hybrid scenarios that, you know, people typically see, the typical use cases that people want to try out in the cloud and use the cloud for. It's going to be a very Azure-centric view because hybrid is between the premises and the cloud for the context of this session. We are going to then talk about how you build services in the cloud so that you can connect them back to your premises. And we'll wrap up the session by talking about how you could connect your premises to the cloud using various technologies. Actually, we have a session following this one in the same room, starting at 10:15 or 10:30, where we will talk about one of the specific technologies called Express Route that enables you to link your premises to the cloud without having to go through the internet. So if you're interested in that topic, please feel free to stay back after this session, and we'll cover that topic in detail. We do have some exciting customers and partners who will be talking about how, you know, they've used Express Route, so that's going to be exciting. Hybrid seems to be the theme of this decade for some reason, and when I was trying to prepare my decks, as I went online and searched for, you know, in decade, how many sessions use the word hybrid either in their title or in their description, I could see about 38 sessions between breakout sessions and, you know, hands-on labs. So there's quite a bit of content going on in terms of what hybrid is, and I wanted to define what hybrid meant in the context of this session and what we would be focusing on, because hybrid means a lot of things and covers a whole lot of areas. So for the context of this session, we are primarily going to be talking about hybrid infrastructure, which means how do you build services that span your premises and the cloud specifically being Microsoft Azure. And we are going to take an infrastructure view on this, which is how do you move your data between your premises and the cloud? How do you sit on-prem and have your data on-prem while running compute in the cloud? Or how do you run applications that are actually split between your premises and the cloud? So we're going to cover all those scenarios today. So just to get started, you know, we've all been seeing a whole big evolution that's happening in the industry today, and the way people such as yourselves consume, you know, build and manage applications. Things are moving from a world where it's been predominantly owned hardware in your data centers, where you rack and stack hardware, power them up, wire up SANs, and do things like that, to a model where you're actually consuming these as you lease them, you consume them as a service. That's a major revolution that's happening, and it's not going to happen overnight, so people are not going to switch off their data centers overnight and directly move to the cloud. There's actually going to be a gradual phased-out approach to this, and we want to be supporting you in the efforts to actually have some amount of your deployments on-prem and some of them in the cloud, and have that connectivity established between your premises and the cloud so that you can still continue to run what you already have on-prem and start using the cloud and migrate them face by face. So as you migrate from resources that are on-prem to the cloud, or if you choose to have setups that are distributed between your premises and the cloud, you do have a major shift in the way you manage resources. So most people are used to managing servers and physical routers and SANs, and that's slowly shifting away from managing physical resources to actually managing services. You're now primarily interested, you take compute, storage, and networking for granted, and you start managing the applications and services that run on top of the platform. And essentially, this is also a good time to essentially start migrating your applications that used to run on mainframes and, you know, old architectures that were built for very, very high availability, assuming failure was extremely low, to a new model where you're consuming them as services, you're adopting a service-oriented approach. So you design applications that can scale, that are elastic, and that can actually withstand failures. So that's how the application patterns are shifting as people adopt and consume the cloud. Now, Microsoft is, you know, uniquely positioned in a way where, you know, we are probably one of the largest companies that have both an offering that solves your private cloud needs and the public cloud needs. And our focus is in basically offering you a consistent experience across both the premises and the cloud. So you can actually use Azure as your cloud solution, and you could use a Hyper-V-based system in your premises, or you could go to a third-party host or provider who also runs a Hyper-V-based cloud. So all three of these entities, if you use them, if you use one or two or all three of them, will look and feel like they are the same environment for you from a management perspective, from a service orchestration perspective, and from a usage perspective. And that's essentially how we want you to consume the cloud. It could be a hybrid between any of these three environments. Your experience in terms of setup, management, and usage should be the same. So let's look at what people are typically used to. And, you know, from our perspective, it starts at the lowest layer. People have had physical infrastructure. People have slowly started virtualizing workloads. Workloads now run in virtual machines on top of compute. And you store your data in SANs. And as your application grows and as you use your applications, identity is a key part, so use Active Directory and so on. Now, when you migrate to the cloud, you're actually connecting your premises to the cloud using various connectivity technologies, various networking technologies that enable you to connect between your premises and the cloud. And Narayan's going to be spending a lot of time talking about solutions for services that run primarily in Azure. And Yushin is going to be talking about services that help you connect, namely the site-to-site VPN solution and ExpressRoute. Then comes the compute services. You can run your virtual machines. You can stop your virtual machines on-prem, get your VHDs over, copy it to Azure, and start them back as virtual machines and run them in the cloud. And the great thing is that the Azure virtual machines are powered by our Azure storage stack, so storage goes hand-in-hand with compute, and you also have to store a lot of data. Now, storage also has other key benefits in the sense that you can do backup and DR and a whole bunch of other stuff in the cloud. So we have solutions like StorSimple that help you index and backup stuff in the cloud directly into our storage stack. And once you have this bare-bones infrastructure in place, you can actually start building on higher level services. You could consume, Azure using, either websites or service bus and, various services that help you simplify development of applications. So having infrastructure on-prem and infrastructure running in the cloud, having them connected to each other, and then moving over to higher level services to help you develop applications in a faster amount of time is what our key strategy is at this point in time. And one way to, glue them is to use System Center. System Center has a whole suite of products that help you manage resources on-prem and also help orchestrate services in the cloud. So this slide, all we wanted to show is the fact that you can, if you were to use the System Center suite of tools to manage your premises, and if you were to use the the Microsoft Azure pack, you can have a consistent experience in deploying services and managing them between your premises and the cloud. And at every layer, what our goal is to have consistency across both the premises and the cloud. So let's talk about what hybrid actually means. We've basically divided the scenarios and what you can possibly do into three different distinct sections. The first phase is where we talk about what it means to you from a data perspective. Moving large volumes of data is a big inhibitor for people to consume the cloud. Now, there's a whole lot of services and scenarios that we cater to that would help, minimize this barrier and help you adopt the cloud better. So we'll talk about backup, disaster recovery, and we will talk about archival in a bit. We will then talk about scenarios where you still want to retain retain storage back in your premises because of compliance perspectives, and you want to use compute in the cloud so that you can burst and have compute running in Microsoft Azure. We will then move to talking about services that run purely in the cloud and then wrap up with connectivity. The first scenario that I wanted to talk about is backup. you know, when you have large volumes of data that you don't use much, you typically want to put them in tapes and ship them off to some place where they are stored in some vault. It can be an expensive proposition, and if you ever wanted to recover them, good luck in searching for the tape, plugging them into a drive that actually connects to a modern computer and extracting data. It's, I think, in modern days, next to impossible. So if there was an easy way for you to basically drag and drop stuff into some sort of a UI tool that automatically backed up this data that you wanted to save in the cloud automatically, it would be cool. So we have a service called Azure Backup. I'll show a quick demo of this when we in a little bit. It's as easy as actually downloading a user interface from the Azure portal, installing it in the machine where you want to actually back up data, and pointing it to folders that you actually want to back up in the cloud. You can determine how often you want to back up the data, and how much of data, and how many backups you want to store, or how many snapshots you want to store in the cloud. It's a few clicks of the mouse, and you have your data easily backed up in the cloud. The next thing I wanted to talk about is, you know, archival, but at the same time, archival means a very complex process. We have products like StoreSimple that essentially simplify that. The StoreSimple appliance essentially looks like a SAN to your network. It's just an iSCSI SAN in your network. You deploy this, you put data there, the appliance automatically does indexing, deduplication, and so on, and pushes least used data into the cloud. It creates a store. You point it to a storage account, and it pushes that data into the storage account. As and when needed, it would automatically go to the storage account, pull that data back to you, and for all practical purposes, everything will look like you're accessing a SAN from your premises. The third scenario is site recovery. Now, DR is a very big thing. People invest in millions of dollars in building a complete DR site, and there's always a lot of manual work that's involved in basically setting up and triggering the whole DR process. Wouldn't it be too cool to have a service that basically automatically configures this DR scenario for you and immediately triggers a DR site for you and creates a new site for you and gets all the services back up and running when disaster actually happens? That would be cool. So that's what our Azure site recovery service is all about. You actually point a whole Hyper-V farm or a system, you know, a whole set of servers that are managed by System Center to Azure. Once you configure them, it actually backs up the whole data, all your VHDs in the cloud. And once it's actually made a full copy of all these VHDs in the cloud, it can actually trigger the recreation of your on-prem environment in the cloud within a virtual network. I'll actually show some of this as part of a demonstration next. So it's as easy as going to the portal, downloading an application and downloading a bunch of certificates, installing them in your machine, and actually getting them to work. So instead of me talking about all these scenarios, I thought I'd show this to all of you in the form of a demo. And actually, I wanted to share a very interesting story with you. DR is one of the key things that I wanted to show you. Early this morning, I was trying to rehearse my demo. My demo is actually set up in a cage in an Equinix data center in Silicon Valley. I've tried to create a DR site for that in Azure. I was trying to run a hybrid application between the servers that are physically racked and stacked in the Equinix data center in Silicon Valley and the Azure site, and I was going to connect them using ExpressRoute. Now, this was set up. It's been working great. I bragged about it to my entire team, and at 5:30 this morning, we lost power to the servers that were actually running in Equinix. So the servers were dead, and I freaked out. But luckily, we had Azure site recovery. It kicked in. I could actually create a copy of it. Now, the site is back up. We had some heroic effort from our friends in Equinix to get that site back up. So I'll actually show you what we did and how we actually recovered and how you could actually do this in reality. So I firsthand experienced disaster this morning. We recovered, and I truly am a believer of the cloud based on my experience the last few hours. So for the sake of the demo, what I'm actually going to be showing you is a SharePoint farm. The SharePoint farm is actually split between the premises and the cloud. I have two instances of my front end for the SharePoint farm running on premises, two instances running in a virtual machine in Azure. I have the same for the application servers, and I have a SQL HA cluster where one instance is running on premises and the other instance is running in the cloud. All of them are in a hybrid configuration where the compute in Azure runs within a virtual network. I have Express Route, which is a cool new technology. I'll talk about that next, connecting the Azure environment to the cloud. Now, everything that's in the cloud, everything that's on-prem is running on two Hyper-V servers where I have my domain controller, an F5 load balancer to load balance my front ends, my SQL database, and so on. So the hypervisors have been configured for Azure Site Recovery. So every one of the instances in the, all the VMs that are running now have backups or can be configured to have backups in the cloud, and I'll simulate a disaster for one of the front-end virtual machines, and you'll see how fast we can recover. The other cool thing that we did was when you're configuring DR and all these kinds of technologies, you have to move large volumes of data between your premises and the cloud. We used a WAN optimizer, a Riverbed Steelhead, to actually optimize traffic going between Equinix and Azure. We have a physical Riverbed appliance that's sitting in our cage in Equinix, while we have a virtual appliance, a virtual machine running the Riverbed Steelhead appliance in Azure that's actually doing the WAN optimization on the Azure side. So we got some staggering numbers, and I'll show you that as well as part of the demonstration. So first things first, let me connect to the virtual machine. This is one of the virtual machines that's actually running in Azure, where I actually have the SharePoint farm running. So half of it is on-prem and half of it is in Azure. So as you can see, the SharePoint farm is pretty responsive, even though it's running in hybrid configuration. Half of it is on-prem and half of it is in Azure. So this is actually running in, the physical part of it is in Silicon Valley, and the Azure, I've been using the US West data center for Azure to split this SharePoint farm. So it's actually pretty fast and snappy. Now, the database powering this SharePoint farm is a part of a SQL HA cluster. And as you can see, I have a constant ping going between my primary and secondary databases. One of them, the instance that I'm connected to, is actually running in the Equinix data center, and it's actually talking to a database that's actually running in the Azure virtual network. You can see that the latency, I'm consistently getting 1 to 2 milliseconds data center latency across the Equinix data center and the Microsoft Azure environment. So it's pretty much like a LAN environment, or the experience that you get if you're that close is like a LAN environment. It's a pretty robust connection, and it can handle data. So if I wanted to actually fail over my database, I could actually easily do that. I have... I can failover my database. All I need to do is say failover. I connect to my database. And you'll see that within a matter of seconds, it should typically be seconds, the entire database is now migrated from the one that's been running on-prem to the one that's running in the cloud. So right now, I've failed over the SharePoint farm's database. The database that's servicing the SharePoint farm right now, the primary database, is actually running in Azure rather than the one that's running in the Equinix data center. And you'll see that the SharePoint farm that we still had continues to work. It just has to connect to the new database and pick up that instance. So that's how SQL HA works. We'll have Narayan demonstrate SQL HA in great detail in the second part of the session. So now let's look at how we configured Azure Site Recovery for this. This is actually a SharePoint farm. It's a very legit multi-tier application. So let's look at how that's been set up and what you could do if a disaster actually happens, like what happened this morning. For that, I'm going to log into the Azure portal. So whatever we did, I'm actually not an expert at SharePoint or any of this stuff, looking at all the online documentation, I was actually able to recreate all these environments and set up this demo. So it's actually not very hard. If you're interested in actually recreating this environment after the session, I can talk to you and help give pointers to where you can get it. So I actually created a vault where I configured the hypervisor to replicate. So I'd actually replicated one of the virtual machines, one of the web front ends already, just to show you for the demo. It took about a day, given that the web front end had about 1,800 gigabytes of data. And we used a Steelhead WAN optimizer to basically... connect between the premises and the cloud. And if you look at it, when I was transferring data between the premises and the cloud, this is a graph of what happened in the last week. So it has a couple of snapshots of me taking backups and so on. You can see that what you see in the blue graph at the bottom is actually the throughput in the LAN network. That's actually the data that's going to the WAN optimizer. What you see as brown is actually the data that leaves the WAN optimizer through ExpressRoute into Azure. So you can see that there's a significant amount of data reduction that actually goes over the WAN over ExpressRoute. A typical average, you see about 70% reduction in throughput that goes over the WAN between your premises and the cloud. So it's you know, pretty dramatic, the reduction in data that's going between your premises and the cloud. Using a physical WAN optimizer in Equinix and a virtual appliance that's running in Azure. So it works really great. So once what you do is you actually go to this website, download an agent, deploy it in the hypervisor, and once that agent installs, you're ready for site recovery. So you can start the replication process, and it starts copying over your VHDs of your VMs into an Azure storage account that you pick. Now, I've completely protected this one of my front ends, and if I wanted to actually test failover, which would basically trigger a failover process, we can see what it looks like. I'm going to failover to a network that's actually going to be running in the cloud, which is going to be connected to my network. Again, I've used ExpressRoute to connect my disaster recovery site back to the on-prem network. In case the data center went down, it could be in any to any network. So I've created this VNet called DR site, and I've started the DR testing process. It's now extracting that VHD that it copied over from the premises, spinning up an Azure virtual machine within the virtual network that we pointed it to. So in about 2 or 3 minutes, it's going to prompt me saying, hey, I've created this virtual machine. Check if that virtual machine is running and tell me that it actually works. That's what testing for failure actually does. So we'll give it a couple of minutes. So setting up DR is as easy as that. And you know, all these things that I just showed you took me about a couple of days to set up and get running, and I'm an absolute novice at this. So why I'm telling you this is planning for DR, planning for backups and things like that take a long time and used to take years and months of planning and a lot of capital to set things up. But then being a novice and being a small-scale setup, I was able to do it in a couple of days. It lowers the bar for backups and site recovery and so on to a point where it could be done really fast. And the recovery time is really short. As you can see, you know, when this succeeds in a couple of minutes, you have a complete DR copy of that virtual machine running in the cloud. And I'm just showing that in a manual process. If you actually define a DR plan, once it senses that the on-prem version is dead, it automatically recreates that virtual machine in the cloud. So that process is going on. If you click on the job, it's going to show you the fact that it is actually creating the virtual machine. We can go to the virtual machine tab. And if I was to refresh this page, you would actually see the virtual machine show up in a minute or two in provisioning state. So it's that fast. So literally, in a matter of minutes, probably in less than 30 minutes, you have a complete DR site that you could have created in case disaster happens using a technology like that. As you can see, SP web front end test 2. This is the virtual machine that it actually spun up. and is in the process of creating as my DR copy. It, once it fully provisions, which takes about 4 or 5 minutes, it would be part of the domain that I already joined it to. It'll be part of my SharePoint farm, and it will be ready to service the SharePoint farm once it's back up. So setting up a DR copy and bringing it up is as easy as that. So let's get back to the demo. Let's get back to the slide. So after this morning's experience, you know, I am not exaggerating it. I'm a true believer in two things. First, disaster does happen, and the cloud does save your ass if something like this happens. So trust in the cloud has gone up a lot more since this morning. So just to recap, what I showed you today was essentially a true hybrid application, a SharePoint farm that's running where some of the tiers are running on-prem, some of them running in Azure as virtual machines. We've connected the premises to the cloud using ExpressRoute. We'll talk about ExpressRoute in the next session if you're interested in. It's a complete session by itself. We've set up Azure Site Recovery to basically back up and, you know, recreate the environment, on-prem environment, in case disaster happens. And we simulated disaster. Since we are moving large volumes of data between the premises and the cloud, ExpressRoute plus WAN optimization gives you significant benefits. Now, let's look at the opposite scenario. We've talked about scenarios where you're moving large volumes of data from your premises to the cloud. Now, there are cases where you can't move your data back from your premises to the cloud because of probably compliance or other regulatory restrictions that you may have. If you're running a hospital, you cannot store patient records in the cloud and so on. In such cases, you may want to retain data on-prem, but do a lot of processing on them. If your workloads are such that you're doing a batch processing task or some sort of an HPC application, getting compute on demand to work on the data set that you don't want to move to the cloud is actually very important. So what we've done is with ExpressRoute and with a bunch of partners like NetApp, we've basically enabled a scenario where you can run virtual machines in Azure that actually connect to a storage appliance, a NetApp filer that's actually running in an Equinix data center or on your premises. And you could just mount these iSCSI drives just like how you would on-prem. So it's a SAN that's servicing a drive to your virtual machines that are connected in the cloud. And you would just be able to use it just as a SAN and consume all the data that's stored there. This, of course, requires you to either go with NetApp and set up a physical server, a physical SAN in a colo facility and do it. Another option would be to go with something like what Zadara Storage offers. Zadara Storage is yet another partner of ours who've essentially offered on-prem storage as a service. So essentially what you do is you buy drives and you can grow and shrink them on demand. They're co-located in an Equinix facility, and they will just look like an iSCSI drive to your virtual machines that are running in Azure. So you just mount them and use them for all your applications. So we've lowered the bar with partnerships with NetApp and Zadara for you to be able to realize scenarios where data sits on-prem and compute sits in Azure. So we now want to migrate to a section where we're going to talk about, we talked about how we move data. Now we can talk about how you build services that actually run in Azure. I'm going to hand over to Narayan to take you through that part. Thank you.
Thank you, Ganesh. I'm telling you, it's so good to see him so relieved. He was quite tense in the morning that it was not working. So good luck. So the session I want to focus on is, you heard a lot about the scenarios, right, that you can run in hybrid. What are the disaster recovery, backup? These are things in your mind. When you heard the word hybrid and moving to the cloud, it's natural that these things come to your mind. What will happen in case of disaster? What's going to happen in case of backup? What happens if I lose data? I'm putting in somebody else's data center. What's going to happen? And I hope that Ganesh's session helped answer some of these questions. What I want to focus on is, now that you believe in the cloud and in the hybrid technologies, what is that makes sense? What scenarios or workloads really is apt for this setup, for the hybrid setup, right? So let's think about it. Anytime that you have something called elastic in nature. I would say it's a good pattern to kind of think about the cloud here. Anytime you want something to grow and shrink, right, you should be running that workload in the cloud. Think of your batch processing or some kind of a web proxy. You may need to have n instances at some point in time, but you don't have to maintain that throughout the year. You want to reduce it, you want to increase it based on the time of the year or whatever it is. Those kind of workloads make sense to run in the cloud, right? The other set is dev and test. So here, you really want to make use of the cloud for the scale it offers, right? So you develop something in your on-premises, and you want to test that out to 10,000, 20,000, 100,000 instances. Now, for you to set that up in your on-premises is going to be quite expensive, and it's going to be time-consuming. Now, here is what you need to make use of the cloud for, right? It's easy to just burst into the cloud and use the resources the cloud offers for you to get this thing done. So that's another pattern that you should look at. Anytime you need scale, right, use the cloud for that. You don't have to move everything to the cloud to use the scale that the cloud provides. You can still use some part of it in your on-premises, like develop everything in your on-premise, but when you want to test it, just boom, burst into the cloud. That's a good thing to do. The other thing is your line of business applications, right? A typical multi-tier application is actually having a number of components, right? Not everything needs to be on your premise. You can move some to the cloud to take advantage, and I'm going to spend some more time talking about that in the next slide over here. So I just thought about, like, what is a multi-tier application or a line of business application composed of? What are the usual suspects? When you want to go build something, what do you usually come up with? You definitely come up with a web proxy or a front end, right? You always have a front end to any of your applications that you want to run. The next step is the web front end needs high availability. It needs exposure, right? Your customers and clients want to access them. So you need to expose this to the internet. And you want high availability for this. The one front end goes down, you want to automatically still keep the website running. So you definitely want load balancing. And you want exposure to the internet, right? These are some common things everyone of you here would have a need for. And then at the next step, you're building up the line of business application. So you want a domain join. You want to have DNS, to discover rest of your infrastructure. You want to have some application servers, some databases, right? This is typically some of the components that you find in a multi-tier application. You may have less of it or more of it, but I'm just taking the common ones. And what we recommend is, once you have a setup like this, you want to put this in something called as a virtual network. When you come to the cloud, you want to put it in a virtual network, because putting that in a virtual network gives you this. It gives you high connectivity across those different services. Now, as you know, a cloud is a multi-tenant platform, right? There are like thousands and millions of customers running in the cloud, and each of them deploy their service in the cloud. So between services, we don't let them talk to each other through private IP addresses. We want to make them go through the public IP address so that you can do authentication and whatnot to trust between the services. Now, if all these four, five different services are your service, you don't want to be going through the public internet or the public IP address to talk to each other. You want something more private, and that's what virtual network actually gives you. So by doing a virtual network, you can kind of talk to each of your services using a private IP address, and that's why you need them, right? Now, the next thing is, not all of these components need the same level of security, right? The component on the left is a web front end. It's exposed to the internet. So you're going to have users from the internet access that, right? So it's kind of less secure. It's more vulnerable to attacks, maybe, right? So you want to kind of separate that out to say, this is actually a DMZ for me, right? So, and I want to not have this exposed completely to my rest of my infrastructure, because that's kind of a risk. So you want to separate that out into a DMZ. And for the rest of the thing on the right-hand side, you want to have high availability for them, but you don't want to expose them to the internet. So you can make use of things like internal load balancers, which is you still get high availability, like you can load balance across different instances, but not exposed to the internet. So you want to make use of that. And finally, we do understand that not everything can move lock, stock, and barrel to the cloud. there could be some things that you want to retain in your data centers, in your on-premises. So we recognize that. There could be some services that you want that runs over there. Now, for that, we provide the hybrid connectivity technologies like site-to-site VPN or point or express route, one of those flavors, to connect back to your cloud. So with this kind of a setup, I can actually think of any application that you have in mind or service, you should be able to make use of it, right? And this is going to be the basis of my talk today is the different components that you see here, how do you actually use them in the cloud? How do you take advantages of the new features and enhancements that we have done over the past 2 years or so to set this up to work for you? That's going to be my focus. So what does the Azure cloud offer to you in terms of infrastructure to run a multi-tier application that is hybrid in nature? Virtual network. Now, before I go detail into this, how many of you have used a virtual network in the cloud to deploy your services? Okay. See a few hands slowly rising. So that's actually quite interesting because what I recommend, what I consider is the virtual network is a basic building block. That is the first thing that probably you should think of when you start deploying into your cloud, deploying your services into the cloud. Because this actually is your trust boundary. You come to the cloud and you say, this space is mine. You literally draw, think of it as literally a drawing a circle or a box saying, this is going to be my space. And that's where they should start with, right? And once you do that, it gives you the familiarity that you have in your on-premises. In your on-premises, you probably have like network segmentation, different subnets, you have different services running there, IP address management and all that, right? And that is what you get in the cloud. So this is literally networking that is actually virtual in the cloud, similar to your computer storage. So you should start there. You should start to define a virtual network, right? And that gives you the ability to bring your own IP address space, right? So you define the IP address space. You do network segmentation. You say that my virtual network is going to have these different subnets with these different IP addresses, right? And as you deploy the services into them, you can even dictate what IP address the service should actually get, right? So, and those IPs are going to be stable and persistent, so just like your on-premises, right? And if you're doing hybrid applications, this is almost the starting point. Because you are saying, I have some setup running in my on-premise that I want to move into the cloud partially, right? You take some of those and move into the cloud. You need a base to start with. And that base is virtual network. So that's basically a pie, if you think of in the cloud, that's going to be yours. You can put a name to it, right? And by running a virtual network, there's a unique advantage of having the IaaS and PaaS run together, right? So in Azure, Microsoft Azure Cloud, you can have two types of services. One is a virtual machine, where it's more stateful. You just create a virtual machine from an image or your own image. The other is a cloud service, which is basically a web or a worker role that you can build using Visual Studio or whatever, and then you can deploy into the cloud, and then you can have multiple instances of that to scale up and scale down. These are two types of deployments that you could have in the cloud. And by putting them both in the virtual network, they can talk to each other using the private IP. That's where virtual network really actually pays for you. So, second is the virtual network. In the virtual network space, there's another improvement that we have made is we have made this regional scope. I mean, you have if you think about Azure, you have different regions. Today, we have 19 different regions in Azure that you can deploy services into. And each of these regions, there is a large number of data centers. There is thousands of servers all powered up and connected that we have assembled in under each region. Now, for you to your virtual network right now has the ability to span across this entire region. So you create a small hole or a small pipe for yourself, and that can expand as your needs and demands grow to the entire regional scope. So that's the picture of like, you know, having different scale units in our data centers and regions, and your virtual network can span across them, right? So with this, what you can actually get is different scale units could offer you different types of properties of VMs. So you have heard about the D-series VMs, you've heard about the A8, A9 series VMs, you've heard about the small VMs. So different scale units could offer different sizes. in your virtual network now can span across these different scale units. So that gives you the ability to have different types of VMs running in your virtual network. You can have a small VM and a D-series VM, both running in your virtual network, can see each other using private IP addresses, and you can, you know, get your workload running that way. Another new element that we have added is, if you want to really do a true hybrid application, you may have a lot of public IP addresses that you have in your on-premises. You can even bring some of that to the cloud and say, consider this as a private IP address space, because I'm going to be running VMs using this IP address spaces. So that's the new thing that we're actually adding as well. The next major thing is security in the cloud. And I can understand if you have this concern in your mind, right? Okay, I believe in the cloud now. I'm going to move some of it to the cloud. I'm going to retain some of it in my on-premises. But is it safe enough? Do I get the, because at least in my on-premises, I can see it every day. I have control over it. I know nothing is going to happen to this thing, so I believe in this thing. But cloud is something that is running somewhere that I don't really see. I don't get a physical sense of where it is. Can I trust this? What kind of services should I put there? And when I put some services in the cloud, what kind of security do I get? There is a natural concern that you may have. And I want to kind of try to address that, at least from a networking standpoint. We have done a number of things to give you some abilities to secure your services running on the cloud. So today, this week, in TechEd, we're introducing this new feature called security groups, or rather network security groups, which is going to give you the ability that you're very familiar with. Because I'm sure in your on-premises, you have network ACLs. You have these kind of rules defined for on your load balancers or on your VMs or your virtual machines to say, I want to allow this traffic, I don't want to allow this traffic. And typically, that is like a 5-tuple, say, about source IP, the port, and the destination IP. And then you kind of define that rule and you apply on that, right? We provide the same capabilities on the cloud now. I mean, again, this works very well for a hybrid application because the similar policies that you may have for a service running in your premises, you can move those policies into the cloud using network security groups, right? And once you define this, your policies, you can templatize that and you can give a name to that group. And once this group is available for you, you can reuse it. You can take this group and put it on a virtual machine, or you can put it on a virtual subnet. And it's going to work on that virtual machine or on all the machines on that virtual subnet. To give you a little bit more details, because I think this is really an important concept for you to get familiarized with, because this is going to give you the network segmentation that you actually need. So look at the picture on the right-hand side. So like I said, let's say you have a subnet, and you have two VMs running inside the subnet. Now, you can define this security group for this particular VM1, and you can come up with a different set of rules here saying, this VM1 is my backend server. I only want to allow inbound connections to it from my app server, from nobody else. And you get that kind of a granular table where you can define multiple rules, where you can talk about the priority of the rule and the order in which the rules are going to apply, whether you want to allow or deny the rule, that's your access, and then you can define like the source IP address and the source port. The connections coming from this particular source address is what I'm going to trust. And the destination IP, which is basically your local IP, if your machine has multiple local IPs, then you can actually make this rule specific to a particular IP in your local machine. And then you can finally say what protocol, TCP or UDP or any protocol. So you get that granular control that you can define, and you can put that on the VM1, right? Now, as an additional step, you can also do this. You can define another set of rules on your subnet, right? And the way it's going to apply is any packet that is going to come into this virtual machine needs to first get through the subnet ACLing. Think about this as the two levels of defense that you have, two layers of security. The outer layer is your subnet layer. So any packet coming in should pass that. And the subnet may have some rules as to it may reject some certain things. So let's say that's allowed at that particular layer. Then the packet traverses up into the VM layer, and then it's going to be subjected to the rules that you have on the VM. This is for the ingress traffic, for inbound traffic. On the egress, the opposite is going to happen, where any packet that is leaving your virtual machine is going to go through the ACLs defined for the particular VM, right? And then the next step is going to go through the ACL defined in the subnet. Then it's going to make the way out to the internet or to your on-premises, whatever it is. So here is a very good thing. If you are a network administrator, for the folks who are network administrators, right, you may have some policies that you want to enforce on subnets. You could be one person doing your network rules, and your development team or whoever it is in your company may be deploying services, right? Now, you as a network administrator can come and say, I'm defining a subnet here. It's going to be a database subnet, and this subnet can't talk to the internet. You can just put one rule saying this subnet is not allowed to talk to the internet, right? Now, once you do that, any VM that goes and resides inside the subnet naturally can't talk to the internet, because even though the VM doesn't restrict it, when the packet comes to the subnet level, the subnet will drop it. So you can have two levels of security here, like one can be from a network administrator and one can be from a developer. And this is typical for like enterprise applications where people have different roles, and this is how it works in the hybrid cases where in your on-premises, you typically have multiple firewalls. And that is exactly what you can realize in the cloud as well. And there could also be some VMs with no security groups on them. So they depend on security on the subnet level. And they themselves don't have any specific security rules, and that's okay. So these are all like different, we're really giving you options here. With a lot of permutation and combination, you can actually achieve what you exactly want. And there's a different, we have blogs coming out that describes the feature and how to use it. And there'll be MSDN documentation. So I think you want to read that and make use of this feature because it's really useful for network segmentation. Okay. So the next level, that's the infrastructure. We talked about how you can scale, how you can secure. Now, what more can you do? If you're running some web workloads, what are those features that networking and Azure networking is providing you that you can take advantage of? The first thing is very basic, Azure load balancers. Now, if you remember, I told you, one of the workloads that you should think of is making it highly available on the cloud. In fact, if you ask me, if I need some high availability for a particular service, I will run that on the cloud, right? Because you don't want to be responsible for ensuring that you can provide the infrastructure to maintain availability, power, internet connection. All this will be your problem if you're running it on the on-premises. It's always good to make it somebody else's problem, right? So that's best for this, right? I mean, if you have a service that you need high availability for, throw it on the cloud and let the cloud handle it for you to provide high availability. And that's what Azure's load balancer actually gives you. This is something that Azure infrastructure provides you for free. You don't have to go buy this or pay extra for this. Azure's load balancer is giving you this default load balancing to ensure high availability for your services. So anytime you have a web front end, if you run multiple instances of those, Azure gives you a load balancer where it's going to give you a front end IP, which is basically internet exposed, where people can connect to that. And Azure's load balancer is going to send the traffic to one of the backend instances behind this load balancer, right? This is free of cost for you. And the Azure load balancer can handle both TCP or UDP traffic. It can give you custom health probes, which is like you can define to the load balancer how you want your backend instances to be monitored for health so that the Azure load balancer knows not to send traffic to you when you're in a downtime or going through an update. You can take it out of the load balance set. So all that is something that we have had in the system for a while. I just want to kind of recap and highlight that this is available for you to get high availability for your services. And there are some unique, newer enhancements that we have made to this thing. One thing is the load balancer, the way that it works. How do we load balance? It could be a common question that could be going through your mind. So by default, we load balance using all the five tuples, which is source IP, source port, destination IP, destination port, and protocol. And now we have enhancements where you can say, just load balance using two tuple, just based on the source IP. So as long as I'm connecting from this client, client one, I always hit the same backend server. Why would you need that? Maybe it's a stateful service that you're running. Maybe you're doing remote desktop services on the cloud, which means you always want to get to the same backend machine, even though you're accessing that using a public IP address. So that is a unique ability that you can actually add on, which we're offering. Again, for no extra charge, this is another thing that you can make use of in the cloud. Another thing that we're actually proud to announce is we can now have this ideal connection timeout as high as 30 minutes, right? This is great for if you have mobile workloads. Let's say you're building a service which where you think there's going to be a lot of mobile clients that are going to use this thing, right? The way the mobile clients work is they open a connection to this service and they leave it open for some time because they don't want to keep renewing or refreshing the connection because it drains the battery in the mobile device. Think of it as a cell phone or something running in your car. By having this connection alive all the time means that they need to be doing keep alive packets, which is going to drain the battery of the mobile device. Now, for those kind of workloads, you can set the timeout to be like as high as 30 minutes, which means they can connect to the service once, and they don't have to touch the service for the 29 minutes after that. They can send another keep alive packet before the 30-minute expiration to still keep the session open. So they can save a lot on battery, as well as the time that they need, that they have to reestablish the connections for. So this is great for mobile workloads, right? That's, again, something that we are providing that is default in your Azure infrastructure. The other element to this is, we talked about load balancer and high availability, which is you get a public IP address that you can give it to your customers to connect to, and then it load balances to private instances behind that. This feature is going to give you a public IP address directly on your individual virtual machine, right? So if, for instance, if you're running a workload where you have to access an individual virtual machine from public internet, then you can opt for this thing, right? With this, you can use dynamic ports. You really don't have to define upfront what port you're going to get traffic on because there's no need of load balancing here. Anytime you hit this particular port number 500, it's going to get to the port number 500 on your virtual machine. So if you're running workloads that require you to have direct connection, you can use this public IP address. So as you can see in the diagram over here, this is quite different from the load balanced IP. But the load balanced IP is usually like the traffic is split across the backend instances. In this particular case, from the internet, you have the ability to reach a particular VM running in Azure just by using the public IP address. So that's another feature. So next is, we looked at the infrastructure, what we offer there. We looked at the front end, what we're offering there. Now I'm going to look at the app and the data tier, right? What are we offering and on the back end layers for you to make use of for your hybrid applications, right? So this is another new thing that we introduced in the last 4 or 5 months. It's called internal load balancing. So this is, if you need high availability for your machines, but you don't want to expose them to the public internet, what do? So you still need a virtual IP, right? Because that's the IP you'll always hit, and you want the traffic to go to multiple instances behind that. But you don't want this IP to be a public IP. Then your answer is an internal load balancer. So you can ask the Azure infrastructure to give you an internal load balancer IP. And that IP is going to be coming from your own address space, right? So this is, again, when you create a virtual network, you're describing your IP space, right? And then you're deploying your services. Then you can come and ask for an internal load balancer for one of your services. And you can say, use my internal load balancer on this particular IP that I have. And then this particular IP now becomes a load balanced IP. And any traffic coming to that is going to get load balanced to the backend instances behind it. Why do you need it? So if you have some services that you want high availability for, but that needs to be exposed only within a corporate environment. Think of your HR systems. Let's say you want to move your HR systems to the web, right? To the cloud. You don't want others, anybody to access your HR systems, right? You only want your employees to go to your HR system. So this makes a perfect use case for that. So you can run your front end for your HR systems in the cloud, and you can put them behind internal load balancer. Now, by putting them behind internal load balancer, you get default security now. This service is now discoverable only within your virtual network that you have in the cloud or your on-prem network that you have in your on-premises. Nobody else can see this particular service. So that's why it's very useful and nifty that you can just get the internal load balancer for back-end services or internal-facing line of business applications. So that's the thing. And the other benefit of internal load balancer is for SQL high availability, right? So you have a SQL database. You generally want a SQL database to be highly available. Of course, you don't want your SQL database to be exposed to the public internet. ILB is a great way to get high availability for a SQL database, and also not expose it to the internet. And that's what I'm actually going to show in the next section. It's going to be a demo where I'm going to show how easy it is to set up SQL Always On in a hybrid environment. So how many of you are familiar with SQL Always On or SQL listeners? Okay. I see a few hands. So let me give you a brief intro on what that is. So if you're running SQL Server on the cloud, you can obviously go get a virtual machine with SQL Server image on it, create a database, right, and you get a public IP address. You can use that. You can give that IP to your applications to use that as your database server. But this is not highly available because now you're depending on just single SQL Server to be your database backend, right? Not ideal. You want high availability. What if the single virtual machine goes down? You naturally want high availability. So you can deploy more than one. For example, I would deploy three of them. I would deploy three SQL servers, and I will create a listener, is what they call that. So SQL always on configuration means you're creating a SQL listener. You're basically creating a ring. You're creating a ring and saying these three SQL servers are now part of this ring. I have one IP to access them. Whenever the request comes, the primary in this the ring is the one that responds back. So your data is always synchronized across these three replicas, but your primary is the one that is always responding to your request, either for write or read. That is what SQL Always On is, right? To have high availability across SQL servers. Now, in this demo, what I'm going to do is I'm going to set up this SQL ring, but not all of it is going to be in the Azure. Some of it is going to be in the on-prem, and some of it is going to be in the cloud. And as you fail over now, if the cloud is not available, you can fail. It will fail over to your on-prem. If your on-prem is not available, it will fail over to your cloud to be the primary. And that's exactly what you get. Now, SQL is really, really highly available now for you because it is the ring is now across your hybrid and the cloud. That's basically it, until I bring up my laptop. That's exactly what we're going to do. There's going to be an app server that's going to only contact the SQL listener. It's not going to try and hit a particular virtual machine. Instead, it's always going to hit the listener. And the listener will hit either one of the primaries, and the primary can be either in the cloud or in the on-prem. Let me go to my laptop here. Okay, so what I've done is I've created a virtual network. So as you can see here, a few things that I want you to realize here is I have a virtual network over here that's called SQL VNet, right? I've connected this to my on-premises. My on-premises is running somewhere in my lab over there with a few SQL servers over there. I've connected these two using a hybrid technology called site-to-site VPN, which Yushin will be talking a little bit more about in the next section. So I've connected them right now. And on my virtual network, I have the following virtual machines. As you can see there, I have a SQL client. This is going to be the application that's going to try and access the SQL server. I have a domain controller, a DNS server. I also have two SQL server machines. So I was telling you about three. Here I'm showing you I have two SQL server machines on the cloud, right? And the next thing is, let me go into one of the SQL server machines over here and show you how I set it up. So let me minimize this so that you can get a good idea of what this is. Okay. So now, here you see three SQL Server machines. I showed you two, the two running in the cloud. The third one is running in the on-premises, right? So I have SQL Server 1 and 3 running in the cloud, and 4 is running on the on-premises. The next thing is, the 1 and 3 are actually behind a load balancer. You go back here. Now, this is my SQL Server failover cluster management, meaning it's showing me my SQL Server options. If you come down and then if you look at the bottom, I have two IP addresses. One is 10.0.0.7, the other is 10.1.0.6. What are these? Where are these coming from? The 10.0.0.7 is actually an IP address for my SQL servers running on the cloud. So I have two machines, 1 and 3. I only have one IP address though. That's exactly it, because they are being load balanced behind the 10.0.0.7. So 10.0.0.7 is the front-end IP, which is still private to your network, which can actually send traffic to either one or three, and that's going to be your cloud IP. It's 10.0.0.7. That is still private, but highly available because it's sitting in front of two machines. The 10.1.0.6 is going to be the one that is actually on your on-premises. Right. So I'm just going to go back and refresh over here to tell you. If you go to configure over here to the SQL VNet, you can see that 10.0.0/16 was my address space in the virtual network, and 10.0.0/24 and 10.0.1.0/24 are both my subnets. So my 10.0, the IP address on the cloud was actually 10.0.0.7, right? That's coming from this particular subnet. That's a subnet which is actually, you know, the load balance subnet. Now what I'm going to do is, here's a SQL client. I'm going to access the SQL server. And look how I'm accessing that. SQL command, I'm trying to go to the listener. I'm not going to either of the IP addresses, right? I'm going to the listener over here. I'm trying to list what is the server behind this. This is a query the SQL gives you, is to find out what server is serving this request. So let me try that. That is telling me that the primary is SQL server FC1. And as you can see here, this SQL FC1 is the primary, and that shows as the primary, right? And you can see that the other two are your secondaries, secondary and secondary. Now what I'm doing is I'm going to fail over. So I'm going to fail over to the one on-premise. So I can just go here and say fail over. This is something similar to what Ganesh was showing you. So I'm actually failing over right now to the one on my on-premises. Give it a couple of seconds here, it should be done. Maybe more, maybe 10 seconds. All right, it's done. So now, as you can see here, this is changes primary, and these two are listed as secondary right now, right? Let's go back to the client to see what would have been the impact on the client because of this. I'm still going to go and try to access the listener, and let's see what server name it comes up with. This is taking some time. There'll be a few minutes of reconnects. Should come back though. Yeah, give it some more time, maybe. Let's see that if this is running fine. Yes, it is. Primary over here. It is primary. This is fine. So it should work. Let's see. Oh, there's an error. Maybe we need to give it one more shot. There could be a few seconds of TCP connection timeout maybe, but it's generally, it's rock solid. Trust me on this. All right, there's something going on here, which may have to look into it, but generally, this is just a very smooth thing, where you can fail over. As you can see over here, the failover was successful. There was no issues with the failover because the primary is primary and the secondaries are showing correctly over here. So the one running on the on-premises is actually the primary machine. So that should tell you that like the failover did really happen. So the next section is going to be on the hybrid connectivity. I'm going to hand it over to Yushin to go over that.
Switch back. PP. Okay. Can you hear me okay? Okay, so I only have a couple of minutes, but so we're talking about hybrid, right? You have stuff on premises, you have stuff in the cloud. I think the thing is, there needs to be a connectivity to actually link all these things together in order for you to have a hybrid setup. So as you can tell, we are taking more of an infrastructure biased approach because we are all on the infrastructure side of things. So what we're doing here really is talking about the components, the patterns, the features, the capabilities that you can use. And based on that, either you can build the stuff on top of this hybrid environment that you can do, or you are building a service for your customers, and these are the capabilities that you will be leveraging. So I'm going to focus on what it means to be hybrid and what are the different patterns and what you can leverage on. So the, on the top, we talk, one thing that we often got asked is that what is this different from other application level connectivity such as service bus or something that you have directly connecting from some branches to the cloud using TCP specific connections or HTTP connections. The key thing here is that we are talking about tunneling technology that you can have multiple applications going through a single pipe, connecting two networks or two entities together. Whereas when you have an individual applications only, you're connecting really just one application to another application. At that point, this is actually a very heavyweight approach if you compare the two. So just kind of try to give you a high level differentiation between sort of service bus or the application level connectivity versus the infrastructure level connectivities that we're talking about here. So on the top is point to site. The pattern here is that you have a single computers, laptop, desktop, any machines, anywhere on the internet that needs to connect to your cloud deployment. Okay, so that is what we are calling a point to site. The pattern here is that we want to connect from anywhere. So this is typically net traversal, proxy traversal is a requirement. So we have to use SSL-based VPN technologies. But the characteristic is that the bandwidth is not going to be huge because this is TCP/IP over SSL. Right? And the connectivity is actually not as stable as the typical site-to-site IPsec connectivity because if you have a TCP timeout, then typically the VPN client interpret as a tunnel loss and you will have to be reestablishing those connectivity. So that's the first one. So typically we are targeting those for sort of on-demand, ad hoc, VPN client-like connectivity. So you remote or you actually kind of TS into a network that you can access on. For debugging, for developing, for demoing, or even for conference settings like this. Now the middle one is site-to-site connectivity. This is really a well-established connectivity, the IPsec site-to-site VPNs. Here the pattern is that you have one or more locations or networks that you want to connect to your cloud. So it can be kind of a mesh-like connectivity. The characteristic here is that it is going through the internet. So even though you can have a beefy connectivity options on your premises, you have a huge pipe from your ISPs, and Azure definitely have a very large network bandwidth entering our data center. But the traffic does go through the internet. So one thing about traffic is that you care about throughput, how fat the pipe is, and the latency, how far your workload is, between your locations and the Azure locations, right? So you have to pick and choose between where your locations are, primary, secondary, your branches, headquarters, and Azure definitely have a global footprint that you can choose from. Now, here, the other thing here is that the bandwidth, because this is IPsec, this is going through the internet, so the traffic condition really will affect the throughput and the latency you will get. Now, even though this is really sort of an established sort of a technology, the cross-premise connectivity, we actually are innovating on top of that, introducing Express Route. So you can see the progression. Low bandwidth, kind of median, and then Express Route is where you can really have high bandwidth. So we are connecting data centers via the telco WAN providers, and also Equinix exchange provider directly via private connection to your premises. So here the key thing is you have a wide range of bandwidth options. It's private connectivity not going through the internet. And also that if you are really located close to the Azure data center, and that is how we pick our peering location or the entry point into Azure, then you can see the 1 or 2 millisecond latency as Ganesh just demoed. So this is just kind of different options and different patterns. Now, a little bit about what we're actually introducing. So again, a security feature that's super, super important, right? So until now, any virtual machines in Azure can connect directly to the internet, which is pretty bad from the IP security perspective. Forced tunneling is basically a feature allow you to selectively enforce on a per subnet basis what you want to expose, allow talking to the internet, such as your front end, or your back end. You really want to force or redirect everything back to one of your locations or premises for inspection or auditing. Now, what's the difference between this and the network security group? Network security group basically say, I don't care, just block it. It black holes the traffic. Here, you may need certain connection to reach out to internet, maybe to your partner or to your other locations, but you want to inspect the traffic. So no matter what, I want to know what's going on. This is when you choose to force the traffic back. Of course, it does incur the bandwidth you do need to traverse back to your premises. Now, there are other enhancements in terms of connectivity options, VPN gateways that we're providing. So I won't go over this, right? So we have a higher performance gateway, more bandwidth, more tunnels that you can leverage. No encryption. I want to emphasize one thing, though. No encryption means it's plain text over the network. You can specify on a per connection basis, but really the targeted scenario is that you have a virtual network in one of the Azure region, another virtual network in a different region, and you are using our VNet to VNet connectivity. We want to emphasize that this traffic connecting to Azure region does stay on the Microsoft network. That's why we are comfortable offering you the option of saying, I want better performance, better throughput. So I am choosing not to use encryption because that's really where the overhead is coming from. PFS is for compliance, perfect for secrecy, and we are exposing more sort of transparency on how we run the gateway. You can know what's going on. So we are introducing definitely more partners that we validated, and this is really just a teaser into the next session, the Express Route. I mean, we're running out of time. So finally, in summary, the takeaway here is that we talk about some scenarios. We talk about the capabilities and the patterns you can use. I think the key takeaway here is that definitely cloud hybrid as a technology paradigm is evolving. As we introduce more capability, it definitely will affect how you should optimize the best practices of your deployment. Another takeaway is as a service is the key word here. We want to relieve you from worrying about infrastructure, about deployment, but focusing on the workload that's more important to you, right? This is what the whole premises is about. On the Azure, definitely you don't need to worry about standing up hypervisor, running the VM management server. Even on premises, Microsoft as a company is making improvement in our CPS and the management solution so that you can put stuff down, just switch it on, connect the line, and get to work. Focus on the service, the workload that's important to you. Don't worry about the infrastructure. Don't worry about the underlying technologies. So with that, I'm gonna just open the floor up, and that is our session. Really appreciate your patience and working through. I want to say one thing. I seldom see Ganesh this kind of panicking right before a session. He's really an old hand in Azure. So just to show you the power of the cloud, but even we sometimes will have to worry about what's running on premises, how do we get to that, and stuff like that. So, thank you, everyone. Any questions?